Friends, welcome to the What's Right Show, powered by Sam and Ash Injury Law. 702-820-1234. In a crash, call that number. Call Sam and Ash, because you deserve what's right. I have to fill you in on some palace intrigue here, because I'll always level with you, give you the behind-the-scenes tour. So the debate that we are hosting, that I will be co-moderating with Alan Stock next Thursday, a week from today. It's, as you know, at the Plaza Hotel and Casino, which is at the end of Fremont Street. Great property. My good friend Jonathan Jossel, the CEO of the Plaza, has graciously hosted us. I'm delighted to be there. So please RSVP. Go to the KXNT.com website to put in a, you know, well, reserve a spot if you want to come in person. Doors open at 5:30. Debate begins at 6. And this is Thursday, May 9th. Now, I special shout out, of course, to Sam and Ash Injury Law, Window World, and Aaron Taylor, the real estate guy. Appreciate these sponsors to make this event possible. Without them, we would not be able to do this. Now, we have invited, all the way back at the beginning of last month, invited the three top polling contenders in the Las Vegas mayoral race. And they are, Shelley Berkeley, Victoria Seaman, and Cedric Creer. So I get this email, this communication from KXNT, from headquarters, telling me that Cedric Creer is complaining to the hotel that he wasn't invited. Now, folks, listen. I am a lawyer. I keep things documented. And Alan Stock, who was, of course, who's my co-host, and who you all know from Vegas at 8 for many, many years here in Las Vegas, my good friend, had led the charge of contacting each of the candidates. And I can tell you on my honor that not only did Alan Stock text Cedric Creer, Cedric Creer responded. This guy responded and said, hey, contact my whoever it is in his campaign. Alan Stock, you know, did what obviously did, immediately reached out to that person. There's an email trail. And then there was a response and a conversation. And we've gotten some, you know, some sort of some weak-kneed responses back and forth from Cedric. Victoria Seaman is confirmed. Shelley Berkeley is confirmed. They're the top two candidates anyway. This is a win-win for Cedric. So on Monday, okay, because I am a nice guy and I'm not here to burn anybody, I personally reach out to Cedric. And you've got to appreciate something here. You know, if I have my differences with people, if you're from Las Vegas, if you're here in the community, I want to give you the benefit of the doubt. I love my adopted hometown of Las Vegas. I love it here. And so I'm not out to, you know, kick anybody in the shins. So I send this thing and I just hold on. I'm looking at my phone. Just bear with me here. I have these text messages going back, maybe about a month or a couple months, actually, going back to February with Cedric. Well, he was hitting me up for a campaign contribution, and we had some dates set, and then it just didn't work out for whatever reason. Okay, it was I'll even admit it was my fault. So then it sort of dies down. We're going back and forth. He has my cell phone number. He's the one that reaches out to me originally back in February and January of this year. So fine. So he's got my cell phone number. He's reaching out. And then I reach out on Monday and I said, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't get to connect with you. And I just give him a friendly heads up that his staff is sort of dropping the ball here. and I get no response. And the next thing that I hear is a guy that wants to be mayor blaming us for not inviting him. I'm just letting you all know. Hopefully Cedric can make it. It's all upside for him. I think he's third in the most recent polls. You know, it's... you want to be mayor, you can't blame other people for, you know, for you not wanting to do something. That's my 10 cents on it. All right, this morning, I wake up, I am, as I do, I turn on cable news, I'm watching from bed, and I am, you know, get to all the, you know, UCLA updates, but I also caught Trump going into court. So Trump is, you know, headed back into this bogus Alvin Bragg deal. And he's walking up to the courthouse, and the cameras catch him, and he delivers really a tremendous response here. I'll share a clip of it in a moment, but I keep thinking, I have this thing in my head, because a few days ago, Victor Davis Hanson, who is the intellectual sage of the Central Californian Valley. You know, he's an author, he's a writer, he's a thinker, he is a farmer in the heartland of California. And those of you who are not familiar with this, brief aside, it's the coasts of California that are filled with the weirdos. And I say this as Nevada's favorite recovering Californian, I can attest to this, with a few exceptions. For example, my beloved Newport Beach, California, where there's a tremendous mayor right now, and the mayor before him was my good friend Noah Bloom, who I adore, and it's very conservative people, okay? Will O'Neill is the current mayor there. It's very conservative. But besides that, for the most part, it's filled with commie pinkos, okay? But if you start moving inland in California, you get, it's a completely different world. The farmers of the Central Valley are very conservative. So Victor Davis Hanson, he had this tweet out that caught my attention because it was exactly what I was thinking. And he alluded to the fact that he believes that it's not outlandish to suppose for a minute that this four criminal court cases all going against Trump, and let's talk about them real briefly, right? We had the Letitia James case. This is the property valuation case, you know, Mar-a-Lago, only worth $15 million because Letitia James said so. Okay. And then the Alvin Bragg case that's going on now. The two Jack Smith prosecutions that were sort of lumping in together, and Fannie Willis in Fulton County, Georgia, whatever the hell's going on with that deal. By the way, remind me, Robbie, later, I have an update on that. So at any rate, those criminal cases, there's five technically, but Jack Smith will put that into one. So he said that, he goes, look, it's not a stretch to think that these were not in part coordinated, synchronized, and timed to reach, this is a Victor Davis Hanson quote, to reach their courtroom psychodramatic finales right during the 2024 campaign season. And I'm inclined, of course, Hanson, I'm inclined to go along with what he has to say here, because in part I am convinced. The more that I have seen of the evidence of the record, it is clear that all of these prosecutors have colluded with one another. One of the things that came out, incidentally, in that embarrassing spectacle that Fannie Willis had to deal with, her disqualification hearings, remember, you know, she traveled together with her lover boy, prosecutor colleague, to D.C. on at least a couple different occasions, and had meetings with the Justice Department. And we know this because, you know, Nathan Wade, the, you know, boyfriend of Fannie Willis, billed for it. I mean, he billed for it, and he had in the details of the billing, he had explained what it was for. So they traveled to D.C. to collude. There's another way to put it. We have heard of now, thanks to the judge down in Florida, in Miami, Eileen Cannon, we know that there was extensive collusion between the DOJ, Jack Smith, NARA, the records people. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, the Hansen tweet's not far off. There's been collusion here, no doubt. I'm bringing this up because the more that I examine all of this and I look at it and I think about it and I see how it's all developing, I can't help but thinking that at some point, this is all going to backfire on the Democrats bringing these cases. And I say this because what if the real story, when everything is written, said, and done, is that it's all these prosecutions all blowing up to some degree or another in the faces of these radical left-wing Democrats right as the election is a month, month and a half, 2 months away. Imagine an environment where this all starts to look exactly like it is, a complete and total farce. So let me take you through this today because there have been some developments. You have to understand what is at stake and also need to know what is going on down there in Miami, because this judge is going to be the worst nightmare of Alvin Bragg, of Jack Smith, of Fannie Willis, of Joe Biden, of Merrick the Magnificent Garland, the yes, Attorney General. It's coming apart, and it's not being reported really anywhere else. Sam Murjovsky, News Talk 840, where you're listening to the What's Right Show, brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law, because you deserve what's right.
If you've been in an accident, there's no reason to call a sleazy lawyer.
It's not just about the settlement check. It's about representing your interests and your values.
So call Sam and Ash at 702-820-1234 or visit samandashlaw.com.
The police in California at UCLA, CHP, LA County sheriffs, and other law enforcement professionals forcibly removing overnight the protesters that have vandalized Royce Hall and surrounding areas of the UCLA campus. And this is the best part. They are ripping their little COVID masks right off their faces in front of the camera so that their future employers, mothers, fathers, grandparents can see what worthless little S-H-I you-know-whats these blighters are. Sam Murjovsky, News Talk 840, KXNT. Welcome to the What's Right Show. Trump this morning, as I'm waking up, 9:15 New York time, so 6:15 here, is going into court, and this is what he says about the Alvin Bragg case, the prosecution there. I love this, Trump fighting all the way.
Getting ready to spend another day in the courthouse, which is bogus trial that every leading authority on law says is, should never have been brought, that Alvin Bragg didn't want to bring it until the election happened, and then he brought it. You just do know that this case could have been brought 8 years ago. Could have been brought 8 years ago. Instead, they wait and wait and wait. They know it's not a good case, but we have a very conflicted judge, unfortunately, and it should have never been brought. And who starts a case right smack in the middle of somebody's elections? It should be illegal because it's election interference.
We have a very conflicted judge, speaking about Juan Merchan, who is the Democrat apparatchik trying Trump. You know, it's artfully put. Trump can be delicate and artful when he wants to. Just want to point that out. And my gosh, he was, by the way, going in for a hearing on his various putative violations of the gag order that we all understand to be completely one-sided. Everybody else can say whatever they want about Trump, but Trump has to go in there and keep his mouth shut. And he is the Republican candidate for president in an election year. Just absolutely blows my mind. So this is the hush money case. Now, where it's heating up is the Mar-a-Lago docs case. Now, I told you some weeks ago that the leftists, the Trump agitators, are absolutely beside themselves over Judge Eileen Cannon. Okay? They're saying she's a stooge for Trump. Now, Cannon was put on the bench by Trump during the Trump presidency, and so much is made of the fact that she is an ally of his. Fine, okay. Now, I want to point something out as I followed this case procedurally from the beginning. Cannon has denied every single motion that Trump and his team have put forward to end the case. Now, this is very important. In other words, Cannon has had opportunities to simply drop this case, to boot it. And she hasn't done it. Now, I can't speak for the liberal fascist judges in D.C. and elsewhere that have an agenda and are willing to sacrifice everything for the sake of it. But generally speaking, when you have a good judge, and from experience as a practicing attorney here in Las Vegas and Nevada and in California, a good judge, if they think that a case is bogus, is going to lay down, is going to want to establish a record, is going to want to hear a lot of evidence in order to prevent his or her final decision, disposition of the case, to be appealed. Judges do follow this, you see those billboards of lawyers that say, 99%, success rate or whatever. Judges do follow their appeal rates. They do care about that. And the fact is, a lot of these very left-wing liberal judges, they get overturned. Their decisions get overturned on appeal very frequently. They don't care because they're, obsessed with being ideologues instead of being jurists. But regardless, my assessment here of Judge Eileen Cannon is that she's carefully and methodically putting down, the record, getting everything in evidence-wise in order to make whatever final decision she comes forward with in this case absolutely bulletproof. Now, there is this little thing that happened late yesterday, and it was a paperless order, a notice that came through at the end of the day yesterday in Miami. And Judge Eileen Cannon ordered that on May 8th, next Wednesday, a telephonic conference. Now, I look at these things and I think, what is this telephonic conference all about? Okay. So she writes, because if you do an order, a notice, courts have to say what it's about. And it's public. It's part of the record. So here's what it says. The parties shall be prepared to discuss specific grand jury material implicated in this proceeding. Now, she then goes on and references the special counsel, that's Jack Smith, okay, the bearded wonder that is Joe Biden's stooge on the ground, his report. And I have to tell you, the next part of this really gives a lot of insight into what's going on here. And my take on it is, here's a little preview, my take on it is that Eileen Cannon is going to the heart of the DOJ and Jack Smith looking to put a stake through the hearts of these vampires once and for all. Explain this when I come back. Sam Rojofsky, Newstalk 840 KXNT.
Personal injury law is constantly changing. Uber and Lyft accidents aren't like other cases, but most law firms haven't kept up.
Don't trust a new case to a lawyer who's stuck in the past. Call Sam and Ash, 702-820-1234, or visit samandashlaw.com.
Greetings, friends, and welcome back to the What's Right show. Sam Rojofsky here, Nevada's favorite recovering Californian. Monday through Friday, 1 to 3 p.m. right here on Newstalk 840 KXNT. All right, Judge Eileen Cannon. She is the federal judge down in the Southern District of Florida overseeing the Trump documents case. And if you'll recall, the way this all went down originally is Jack Smith assembled a grand jury. And he... part of the grand jury proceedings, right? People are called before the grand jury. It's secretive. It's off the record. It is really sort of a black box. And, you know, individuals, you don't have a right against self-incrimination, okay? But you still maintain certain privileges, for example, attorney-client privilege. And this is the big one, because if you'll recall, one of the things that happened is one of Trump's lawyers, a guy named M. Evan Corcoran, originally declined to testify. And well, it ended up being a Washington, D.C. Circuit Court judge, Beryl Howell, who is an Obama appointee. This woman is... she is a walking, talking case of legal malpractice, let me tell you. Back in March of last year, she ruled that prosecutors overseeing the Trump documents case could, in fact, break attorney-client privilege and compel this attorney, Mr. Corcoran, to testify. It was part of that that led to the original indictment. Now, we have this thing called the fruit of the poisonous tree. Basically, if you end up with one, you know, defective move by a prosecutor, it poisons everything else downstream. And so when Trump and his legal team now is challenging at every turn this case, they're getting to some of these original sins, if you will, committed by Jack Smith and others in the pursuit of getting Donald Trump at all costs. So this hearing that I was alluding to just before the break, set for Wednesday, next Wednesday, on the 8th, set by Eileen Cannon, is intended, as I said here, is discuss specific, here's a quote, grand jury material implicated in this proceeding in light of the special counsel's sealed status report. At every turn, the federal prosecutors here going after Trump have tried to get everything sealed, have tried to hide things from Trump's lawyers, and even from the judge down there in the Southern District of Florida, Judge Cannon. So here's what it's relating. This is related to information in defendant Trump's motion to dismiss indictment based on prosecutorial misconduct and due process violations, and motion for relief related to Mar-a-Lago raid and unlawful piercing of attorney-client privilege, close quote. Boy, this is interesting stuff. Now, what if I told you, on top of all of this, that numerous reports and evidence, in fact, now suggests that the GSA, the General Services Administration, who supports federal properties, the White House, etc., actually sent 6 pallets of documents to Mar-a-Lago from Virginia to Florida, right? Sent these documents, some to Mar-a-Lago, some to a West Palm Beach storage unit, and that in the FBI's interview, that revealed that the GSA contacted the office of Trump, a former president then, you know, hey, they have got to go. We've got to get rid of these things. You know, when you take this latest development and combine it with the fact, with the understanding that the lawyers over there for NARA, the general counsel for NARA, for the records people, were saying, well, this isn't really unusual. Like, we have problems with every one-term president, you know, who thought he might be here longer, but you know, turned out he got voted out of office. You know, it takes them a while to transition stuff through. And yet that was completely disregarded, and it was the Biden administration that decided to go balls to the wall and pursue Trump criminally. Well, maybe it was even a bigger setup. Maybe they were actually sending documents. And at the same time, Democrat judges were telling Trump's lawyers that they had to testify against their client, which I last year said was absolutely unreal. Because there is something called the crime fraud exception. If an attorney is giving advice to his client on, you know, and it's being used in the furtherance of a crime, but, you know, Trump already had the documents. He wasn't calling his lawyer saying, hey, Corcoran, I'm sitting here, you know, I'm president of the United States, you know, I'm entitled to have these documents, but tomorrow I'm not going to be. What should I do? And Corcoran going, you know, gee, Mr. President, I think you should commit some felonies and we should move these down to Florida and hide them from the authorities. That did not happen. And as absurd as my hypothetical here is, that is exactly what you would have to prove in order to get the crime fraud exception and be able to pierce that veil that protects a sacrosanct communications between attorney and client. This exception to the attorney-client privilege is set up so that, you know, mobsters, for example, can't, you know, talk to their lawyers and say, hey, okay, lawyer, tell me, how do I set this up in order to be able to commit the felonies I intend to commit and get away with it? Right? At that point, the lawyer becomes an accessory to the crime. But, you know, by all accounts, if Trump is talking to his lawyer about keeping the documents, that there was no dispute about him having the documents, right? Trump didn't say, I don't have them. He said he didn't have some of them. But his whole point was, I'm entitled to keep these. And he sent some back that he felt that he wasn't entitled to, and the rest he felt he was certainly within the law to keep, to maintain as his personal record. So anyway, this is where it's headed. And Eileen Cannon, this judge down in Florida, is the only judge who is not solidly in the pocket of Democrats, and they can't handle it. They can't deal with it. And that's why they are foaming at the mouth every chance they get, mainstream media and their enablers. Here's, for example, Joe Scarborough back in June of 2023, right, almost a year ago next month, absolutely apoplectic wanting Judge Cannon replaced. He knew what would happen.
You know, some judges have a lifetime's worth of experience. She has about a lunchtime's worth of experience. And she's about to hear, unless somebody intervenes, she's about to hear the most important criminal case in U.S. history. You know, I understand this was assigned randomly. It's what they say, it's assigned randomly. Again, in my experience, it's a very limited experience. You know, there would be a discussion. And if a federal judge or even a state court judge got a really complex case that they just weren't qualified to handle, there would be a discussion and judge would say, you know what, this is, for now, this is above my pay grade. This is too complex. Let's move it to another division. I'm just curious. I'm shocked that this continues to move forward and she's not recusing herself, but she's woefully ill-equipped to handle these issues.
Why is she woefully inequipped? Is it because she's making decisions that are puncturing the alternative reality created by Democrats that presuppose the guilt of Trump? Is that what that is? Andrew Weissman, who is almost always wrong about anything related to the law, said that Judge Eileen Cannon back in March of this year was engaged in a catch-and-kill effort to benefit Trump. This was on MSNBC's program with Alicia Menendez. Listen to this.
She gave the parties two options to explore and to provide instructions on, both of which were legally wrong, both of which were favorable to Donald Trump. So she is consistently making erroneous legal decisions. They are consistently always on the side of Donald Trump. And as the transcript shows, in terms of how that came about, it came about because it's precisely what Donald Trump's lawyers asked for and said should be done. And then she did it. So this is a judge, in my estimation, who's engaging in, out in the open, catch and kill, which is to never have this case go to trial before the election. He wants to avoid a public trial where facts and law could matter. And that is what she is doing for him.
Notice, okay, that his definition of an erroneous legal decision are any decisions which are favorable to Donald Trump, literally, on both of which she's legally wrong, both of which were favorable to Donald Trump, consistently making erroneous legal decisions, close quote. So that's the standard. Andrew McCarthy, who does not like Trump, okay, I know McCarthy, he does not like Trump, telling you right now, writes an article a couple of days ago, what happens when the law and indictment do not state what the crime is. You look at the Alvin Bragg case. That case is literally, okay, complete legal fiction. Any decision that goes, as we would say, goes against the prosecution and goes in the favor of Trump is I can say confidently, is a sound legal decision. But yet. Any effort to characterize it that way would be met with rebuke by the mainstream media, intent still on using lawfare to take Trump down. Now, we have to take a break. I'm bringing all this up because, again, I think very strongly, folks, convinced of this, the longer that this goes on, the more absurd it's getting, and the Democrats' flimsy, contorted legal logic is falling apart, and the only climax that we're going to get here, legal drama that we're going to get here, that they were hoping, by the way, would all sort of coincide with the lead up to the 2024 election and would take Trump out, I think is going to do the opposite. I think it's going to betray Joe Biden, his DOJ, every prosecutor here, as nothing more than a political left-wing hack. And they abused our Constitution, our legal system, just to win an election. Who's the election interference person now, huh? Sam Rachofsky, News Talk 840, KXNT, listening to The What's Right Show, brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Be helpful if I press the right button. Rarely wrong, always right. Sam Rachofsky here, News Talk 840 KXNT. Yes, 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 Robbie, agreed. Well, what are we talking here about the lawfare against Trump? Trump again in court today. This bogus judge there in Manhattan going after him for speaking out, violating the gag order. It's all such a clown show, right? Because all of Trump's haters who have been proven to be on the pay, on the take of his political enemies, are allowed to say whatever they want. And yet Trump, the candidate, can't. Because some Democrat judge has decided that he can't. He's gagged. So, okay, this Bragg case is a joke, but the documents case is turning into a clown show too. And the judge there is Eileen Cannon, who's the only judge overseeing any of these cases that wasn't handpicked by the Democrats, is starting to bring a fire to Jack Smith and the entire Department of Justice. The Federalist and others reporting that there was six pallets delivered to Mar-a-Lago and another location in West Palm Beach to Trump by the GSA from the White House. Documents were included in that delivery. And then following that, you've got some documents. It's starting to make sense to me, right? Imagine Trump gets sent a bunch of stuff by the government. And then they turn around and in a very obvious way start to make it look like a setup. Now, I know what I would do. I would play, I would do it differently than Trump, God bless him. Trump goes in and says, no, screw you. I'm going to hang on to this stuff. And so he does. And now it's all blowing open. By the way, the other case that we can't forget about is the January 6th case. And there, the DOJ is stymied because the Supreme Court is looking at this going, no, we can't rush through a decision for the ages on presidential immunity. The question there rests on what is an official act versus not an official act of the president. For example, a difference between an official act and a political act. It's very difficult to discern that. You might think you know the difference. Kind of one of these, I know it when I see it tests, but those are difficult in the law. We lawyers, okay, we like words that mean things. So you have to come up with a test. What's the test? It gets tricky because a lot of what a president does is political, even if it's an official act. You know, a president may sit down with, let's say, the leaders of the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, together with the representatives of Israel, and discuss a peace deal like we have going on right now with the traitors that run the State Department. But that's obviously a political move, right? They want to get this thing done and over with before the election comes any closer, because there's a tremendous amount of hot water that the Democrats are in vis-a-vis their left flank, who are all pro-Hamas. Is Biden, by pushing Israel into a truce with Hamas and a ceasefire, is that Biden being political? Or is that Biden, exercising the authority of his office? Now, I'm not here to defend Biden. I'm raising a point. I'm thinking about it as an attorney, right? That is what the Supreme Court is wrestling with. And yet all of these, really low IQ losers like Rachel Maddow are just ranting about the fact that how dare the Supreme Court actually spend any time deciding this. It's Rachel Maddow last week.
I'm not discussing the particular facts of this case.
Stop with the facts. Stop the... Do not tell me about the things that whoever your client is did, or the things in the indictment of whoever your client is that led to this case, whatever it's about.
I want to speak purely in the abstract as if the particular facts of this case, the particular facts of what Donald Trump did, are actually just an unimaginable extreme hypothetical that I don't need to engage with. The conservatives on the court will likely succeed in using this case to further and fatally delay criminal court proceedings against Donald Trump before the election in November. Rather than reject his claims of immunity from prosecution, like all the federal judges who have considered this matter before them have done, they instead will carve out some newly specified class of actions that are immune from prosecution if you're a president. And they will invent a test for deciding what counts as that kind of action. They will send Trump's indictment, Trump's federal January 6th case, back through a whole new cycle in the lower federal courts.
And they are pissed about this. How dare they decide on the facts? Be right back, folks.
If you've been in an accident, there's no reason to call a sleazy lawyer.
It's not just about the settlement check. It's about representing your interests and your values.
So call Sam and Ash at 702-820-1234 or visit samandashlaw.com.
Hi, welcome back. Sam Rogofsky, News Talk 840 KXNT, your place for common sense conservatism, Monday through Friday, 1 to 3 p.m. Okay, friends, my email, sam@samandashlaw.com, sam@samandashlaw.com. Next Thursday, week from today, doors open at 5:30, debate at 6 at the Plaza Hotel and Casino, a beautiful downtown Las Vegas at Fremont Street. Free parking, free admission. Just go to kxnt.com to register. We've got to make sure we save you a place, so please go on there and save a spot. We've got well, a big mayoral race, right? So we want to hear from the candidates. And who are they? Well, we have Victoria Seaman, who is a council woman here in Las Vegas. We have Shelley Berkeley, who is a former congresswoman from Las Vegas as well, and the head of Touro University. And then we've got Cedric Creer. These are the top scoring candidates. We've invited Cedric, just so we know, invited him back on the 5th of April, almost a month ago. And Cedric, Victoria and Shelley, they're both in and excited. And we certainly look forward to hearing from them. It's fine because they're the two top performing candidates anyway in the polls. But Cedric, you know, he's number three and, you know, could pull something out. So we certainly would love to have him join us. This is an interesting thing, though, about politicians. And it irks me to no end. Look, if you can't make it, just say you can't make it. And I think he did that, right? And then he turns around and says, oh, I was never invited. And how do I know that? Well, I, you know, got a call from the station today and said, well, you guys, we need all of your, speaking to me and Alan, because we're the ones putting this together, we need all of your communications with the candidates to prove that this is wrong. And so, of course, you know, I mean, I've got the receipts, sent screenshots over, and anyway, so big to-do today. But it'll be interesting. You know what? I'm prepared to say this publicly. Honest to goodness, after this nonsense from Cedric Creer, if he doesn't show up, we're going to put an empty podium for Cedric at this debate. In fact, those of you listening right now you really don't want to miss this because you just, I tell you, you just, it could be, could be a newsmaker. All right. Oh, Trump, I mentioned, was going into court this morning, and as he is giving his remarks about the BS case against him in New York, he also says this about the protests. Pay close attention exactly to what he says.
I'm so proud of the New York's finest. They're great. They're great people, too. I know so many of them. They're incredible. They did a job at Columbia. And likewise, in Los Angeles, they did a really good job at UCLA. It was very much embedded. And just so you understand, this is the radical left. This is a movement from the left, not from the right. The right is not your problem. Despite what, like, law enforcement likes to say, the FBI director said that he worries about the right. Now, don't worry about the right. The right's fine. Worry about the left, because this is a movement from the left. These are radical left lunatics. And they got to be stopped now, because it's going to go on, and it's going to get worse and worse. And, you know, they take over countries, okay? And we're not letting them take over the USA. We're not letting the radical left morons take over this country. You can't let that happen. And the law enforcement and people at DOJ, instead of going after Donald Trump, they ought to look at what's happening in their own offices, because you're loaded up with radical left people that want this country to fail. And we're not going to let this country fail. Thank you very much.
I think they finally stopped playing. I haven't heard them today, though I stepped away from my desk here a couple times during the breaks. These ridiculous ads on the station, these PSA ads for the FBI soliciting tips on hate crimes. Completely tone deaf, but frankly, a great example of what Trump is talking about. Because you have the FBI soliciting hate crimes. You know what they want. They want to hear about, oh, that white guy over there called that person of color a nasty word, and that's a hate crime. Meanwhile, right under their noses is radical left-wing violence against minority groups. You have minority students being blocked from entering portions of the campus at UCLA and wherever. And I don't want to get too much into the, you know, what's breaking down, what's happening. We've covered it extensively this week. But my reaction as to what Trump is saying here, his comments are spot on. All Trump has to do now to gain voters, to win Democrats over to his cause, is to simply get up there and say, all right, I'm here. If I was president, I would send in the National Guard. I would send in the FBI. I would send in the shock troops and whack all these people senseless. That's what people want. I had another conversation with a friend, a very, very long-term friend. In fact, somebody who grew up in the same neighborhood that I did in Irvine, California. And he's Jewish and he's liberal. His parents are liberal. Great people, right? But we've never agreed on Trump ever, okay? Never. And he is posting on Israel, you know, October 7th, right, posting on Israel. I'm obviously sending him my support from the bottom of my heart. You folks know how I feel about that. And then recently, with these college protests, he's posting or reposting, you know, things people are putting up from what's going on at UCLA, and he's just, I can tell he's agitated about it. Understandably, right? I think we are all in agreement. So I respond to him yesterday because I'm doing this as a test. I'm conducting my own polling, okay? And it's not scientific. Fine, I get it. But I put out this thing where I say, you know, now you don't like Trump, but if he were president, he would have sent in the National Guard on day one. Then I imagine having me as a friend, right? This is the kind of stuff I do. So then I throw that little, like, you know, nugget out there and I wait for the response. It didn't even take that long. It didn't take that long. My buddy responds almost immediately, 100%. These people all need to be, I forget what he said. These people all need to be just, you know, arrested, rounded up and arrested. This is shameful. I don't think it's just because he's Jewish. I don't think this is a case of Trump just winning, you know, half of the converted Jewish vote. I was talking to my buddy in D.C. today, texting back and forth, and I'm sensing some sort of shift, and I'm asking him, because I know he had dinner with Trump a few days ago, and I belong to the school, whether you agree with me or not, it's fine, that I sense if the election were held today, it would be a landslide for Trump. And the only bad news for Trump is that the election isn't being held today. Okay? So when I am optimistic about Trump's chances, it is based on all the information that I have to date as of May 2nd, 2:15 in the afternoon. And I have to say that, right? But he agreed actually with me, and he's a dialed guy. And then we kind of went back and forth, and I'm how many people are there that look at this chaos and just are repulsed by it? How many people are there that aren't political but see this type of vandalism and are disgusted by it? How many of these people were originally put off by January 6th, but that's faded into a distant memory, right? January 6th that's so 2020 and, or 2021 even, right? It's January 21. It's so like 4 years ago, but this is here and now. I think that there's something here. I don't know. Today, brief press conference, Joe Biden speaks out and says this.
We are not an authoritarian nation where we silence people or squash dissent. The American people are heard. In fact, peaceful protest is in the best tradition of how Americans respond to consequential issues. But, neither are we a lawless country. We are a civil society, and order must prevail. In moments like this, there are always those who rush in to score political points. But this isn't a moment for politics. It's a moment for clarity. So let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. Destroying property is not a peaceful protest. It's against the law. Vandalism, trespassing, breaking windows, shutting down campuses, forcing the cancellation of classes and graduations. None of this is a peaceful protest.
And then Biden steps in it and gives Jews the All Lives Matter treatment just in a few words.
There should be no place on any campus, no place in America for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. There is no place for hate speech or violence of any kind, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or discrimination against Arab Americans or Palestinian Americans. It's simply wrong. There's no place for racism in America. As president, I will always defend free speech, and I will always be just as strong in standing up for the rule of law. That's my responsibility to you, the American people, and my obligation to the Constitution. Thank you very much.
Yeah, shut up. Is there any Islamophobia going on right now? Is that the problem? Is that really the problem? Jews are being prevented from entering areas of public universities. You have held your law enforcement at bay, even though this is a violation of federal law, and you are in your condemnation of this, are giving equivocal treatment to the explosion of anti-Semitism, to some imaginary Islamophobia and discrimination against Arabs. Get the F out of here, Joe Biden. You're a clown. Sam Berjofsky, News Talk 840. You're listening to The What's Right Show, brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law, because you deserve what's right. Sam at SamAndAshLaw.com is my email. Sam Berjofsky here, host of The What's Right Show, Nevada's favorite recovering Californian. Email just now from listener Barbara. Barbara came in so quickly, I didn't even have time to respond to you on my computer, but let me just read your email real fast. If African Americans were doing what is going on at college campuses, they would be beat, thrown in jail, etc. There are different rules for different groups. And then you tell me, yeah, I agree. Disgusting Biden took this long to speak up. Your president that will lead. Let me throw this out there to you, Barbara. I, I don't think this really has anything to do with race as it does with politics. Now, what do I mean by that? Democrats and the DEI fanatics make everything, right, in society, the whole order of it all, based on your pigment, okay? Now, I think you'll agree with me. I think pigment is irrelevant. I don't really care what color you are. You could be, you know, purple, and I really just consider the quality of your character, how interesting of a person you are, your abilities, all of that matters to me exclusively. It has nothing to do with race, gender. I don't care who you're sleeping with. It doesn't matter to me at all. All right? Now, point something out here. Do you really think that a conservative black man in America, for example, I'm just picking up, using a specific example here, is treated much differently by the left than a conservative white male? And I bring this up because, Barbara, there's some video that has surfaced overnight from these protests, and this one is from UCLA. This is an African-American male who has made videos. Now, he's disagreeing with the protesters. By the way, at one point, and I don't know if we've got this one, Robbie, but he's actually talking about the fact that he got his GED, he got his high school equivalency diploma in California in prison. So this guy's been through some crap, okay, in life, and he's come out of it going to UCLA, and he's not having any part of what these protesters are all about. I want to play this for you here real fast. He is told to stay out of the encampment because he doesn't agree with the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protesters. And he makes a tremendous point.
So the reason why I keep flipping it around and bringing up race when I'm around these protesters is because that's one of their trigger words. If I try to, like, think for myself around them, let's say I was to say, like, oh, man, I want to vote for Donald Trump in the next election, or, bro, I'm going to watch this Joe Rogan podcast, or just anything, they'll always point out, oh, no, you can't do that. That guy's racist. So anything they disagree with, as white people, if they disagree with someone else, the other white person they disagree with is always racist.
And this is exactly it. So he goes to the protest, okay? This happened after, right? Before, at the protest. This guy is talking to a handful of white dudes in their little pussy mask that they have on from COVID. You know, anyway, these guys, play it, play six.
Bro, I'm an African-American. You are a white man telling me to leave a part of the campus. Do you want me to go to Jasmine Rush and show her a photo of you, the dean of students, and let her know that you was harassing me?
Am I harassing?
Yeah, you are. You're asking me to leave a public place. You as a white man are asking an African-American student to leave a public area at UCLA campus. That's called racial discrimination. You're two white men blocking an African-American student from walking around on the
campus.
You're
allowed to go wherever you want.
Where am I? I'm allowed to go where I want. You seem to be blocking my daughter's stroller from going forward. You just spilled my drink, and you're blocking my child's stroller from moving forward.
We're gonna ask you.
You don't know what Royce Quad is, part of UCLA? As a student, that's what we do. We walk around our school, bro.
I'm gonna have to get you identified, buddy,
for harassing an African-American student at school.
What, is the school a little too integrated for you? You trying to resegregate the school or something?
Do you know why we're here now?
Look at these white liberals, bro. Look at these cosplayers. White liberals, white libs, cosplaying as the oppressed, stopping an African-American student from accessing the school. Nothing new.
Bingo.
Nothing new.
Bingo. This is exactly it. This is what's beautiful about it. And this is the American left today laid bare. It's all a bunch of white liberals, for the most part liberal women, but also some liberal men who have been castrated by society. Squeaky little voices. Oh, I'm not keeping you from anything. These are losers. And they're blocking him from entering their encampment because he's not ideologically pure. So, Barbara, my response is, yeah, of course, if it was if there were, you know, if this was the Ku Klux Klan riding into these universities and saying about people of color what these liberal protesters are saying about Jews, for example, all hell would break loose. And you would have the FBI there. You'd have the Department of Justice stepping in. You'd have the National Guard. 1,000%. But this is really not about race at all. It has everything to do with ideological purity. Race is just a means by which people can get worked up so that the few directing this fight are succeeding in achieving their political objectives. And this guy, in a few minutes on TikTok, lays it all bare. Absolutely fantastic. Now look, even Al Sharpton thinks the Democrats are lost on this. More on that when we come back. Sam Rojofsky, News Talk 840. You're listening to The What's Right Show, brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law, because you deserve what's right. Personal injury law is constantly changing. Uber and Lyft accidents aren't like other cases, but most law firms haven't kept up.
Don't trust a new case to a lawyer who's stuck in the past. Call Sam and Ash, 702-820-1234, or visit samandashlaw.com.
All right, greetings, friends. Welcome. Sam Rojofsky here. The What's Right Show is on. I am... Well, I've been saying this, the optics of all of these incredible manifestations on these college campuses, disgusting, the vandalism, the damage, all these outside agitators. And don't dismiss, by the way, these young people as woke, you know, as woke idiots. Many of them are woke idiots, yes, but they are stupid sheep being led by wolves, and the people that are leading them are dangerous. They have ties to Hamas. They're radical socialists. They're BLM people. They're Antifa. Today, right now, they're all, call it strange, yes, bedfellows. They are fellow travelers in the movement to destroy America. If they achieve their goal, which I don't think they will, but if they do, be not very long before they all turn on each other. So, with that said, Al Sharpton, today on Morning Joe, he is not impressed by any of this going on, thinks it's a terrible look. This is what he said, his exchange with Mika and Joe on MSNBC.
How do the Democrats, how do all of us on that side say January 6th was wrong if you can have the same pictures going on college campuses?
Good Lord, don't make a parallel with January 6th.
You lose the moral high ground.
That has happened, though.
Okay.
That has happened.
They're fighting it. They're fighting the parallel of January 6th. I'm telling you, friends, it's huge that you even have Sharpton saying this. My gosh. Now, my concern in all of this is, what does this mean for the election, right? I know it's bad for the country. That's terrible for the country. And I know that it's already gone long enough to create thousands of hours of footage, right? January 6th was an afternoon. It was one day. This has now gone on for 10. It's still going on as we speak. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of disgusting, horrifying video. And it's, well, and you got Biden up there going, well, this is wrong, but also so is Islamophobia. So there is this chant today at the University of Alabama. In my pursuit of reading the tea leaves, this is an important piece of evidence. So there's both sides are, okay, there's protesters, okay? And at the University of Alabama, yeah, and it's the usual stuff, the Palestinian stuff, and they're chanting opposing slogans back and forth, all right? And then they ultimately, folks, you got to pay attention to this, ultimately come together to agree on a message. Listen. One side's yelling free Palestine, the other one's saying go Israel. But at the end of the day, they all agree that F Joe Biden, right? Or let's be polite here, let's go Brandon, that's an acceptable slogan. And they both sides end up chanting it. Now, why is this big? Right? There's two things both candidates need in order, either candidate needs to win, right? The winning candidate gets votes for him, right? They're all men running now, so gets votes for him for under his name. They check the box for Trump. They check the box for Joe Biden, whatever the case is. But the other thing that they need is they need to have voters not check the box for their opponent. Now, it's not a toggle switch. Most classic light switches are toggle switches. The lights are on or they're off. Okay? And it's like a binary code. And then you have what? You also have the possibility of being neither on or off for somebody. And what I mean by this is that's what happens. Some people may just not vote. They hate Trump, but Biden may be just big of a turnoff for them to not vote for him. Now, is that a vote for Trump? Not exactly, but it's certainly not a vote for Biden, and that costs Biden votes. So it does, in effect, boost Trump's numbers. Now, this is what's so precarious for Biden. Trump is going to get far more votes as a percentage of the population this year than he got in 2020. I'm talking about actual votes cast. How do I know that? I know it because I talk to people, okay? I'm not living under a rock, and I'm acutely aware that people right now are just fed up. They're fed up and they want somebody to come in and begin, you know, setting some law and order down. And Trump's the law and order candidate. Trump's the tough guy. Trump's got the swagger. Nobody doubts that Trump isn't willing to, you know, crack a few eggs to make an omelet. Now, when this country wanted a soft touch in the middle of a pandemic and people were freaking out and everybody was high on pot, the crack a few eggs to make an omelet guy wasn't as appealing, but he is now, because the country has turned into a dumpster fire under Joe Biden. That's right. Do I bring it back? Do I bring back the construction worker last Thursday, a week ago, telling it how it is?
What's it like seeing so many Republicans in Manhattan, so many Trump supporters in Manhattan? Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. It's turning now. Trump's turn again.
What's your message to Joe Biden?
Fuck you.
Yeah, bingo. It's just, and people may, you know, that guy's voting for Trump, but a handful of people won't. They're not going to vote for Trump, but they're certainly not going to vote for Biden either. Trump has done nothing, and let me repeat this. Trump has done nothing in the past 3 months, let's say, to lose votes. He's not said anything terribly offensive. I know that's... are you saying that's a low bar? Okay, but he hasn't. Like, be honest with me. When's the last time you've seen a headline of Trump says, Trump tweets, you know? No, he's not doing that. Okay. Did he blow off court? No, he's showing up every day. Okay. So he's going through all the motions. He's taking it on the chin. He's being the martyr. He's wearing the hair shirt. He's, you know, he's speaking out. He's getting fined for speaking out. Yeah, it's interesting. And at the same time, you know, Biden's just digging himself into a hole. My question is, and I keep asking this, at what point, what, I mean, you've got to think that the Democratic Party at the upper echelons is pulling their hair out, going, this is not the guy to get us across the finish line. Biden is not convincing a majority of Americans that he is the better pick over Trump. So RFK issued a pitch, RFK Jr. has a pitch for Biden. This was yesterday an event. I'm going to share this when we come back. Absolutely a brilliant move. In fact, it's a pitch to Trump, too. Don't go anywhere. Tell you all about this when we return. Sam Rogowski, News Talk 840. You're listening to The What's Right Show, brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Forty-five minutes ago, Donald Trump arriving from criminal court to a Midtown New York City fire department delivering pizzas. Sam Rogowski here, News Talk 840 KXNT. Welcome back to the What's Right Show. My email, sam@samandashlaw.com. sam@samandashlaw.com. That's like I say, he's doing everything right. You'll hear from me if he doesn't. Trust me, I will be the first to tell you if Trump blows it. But right now, he's doing everything right. So against that backdrop, okay, against that backdrop, Kennedy, RFK Jr., has issued a pledge, a no-spoiler pledge, a sort of a bargain, if you will, to President Biden. And the premise of this pledge is, hey, we're going to do in October a poll. Biden v. Trump, and then Kennedy v. Trump. And then whoever does better against Trump in that poll, okay, will stay in the race and the other will drop out. Here's RFK proposing it yesterday on a live stream, and it's why it's making news today.
This is a pledge that I offer to take if President Biden also takes it. Both parties agree to co-fund in mid-October a 50-state poll with 30,000 or more likely voters. So this is essentially effectively zero margin of error in October of 2024. The survey will test the results of a head-to-head race, pitting President Biden against President Trump, and a second head-to-head race, pitting me against President Trump. Both parties, whoever performs weakest against President Trump in a two-man contest, will drop out of the presidential race. And by the way, I'm happy to make this same pledge, although President Trump is not a spoiler because he can actually win. But I'm happy to make this same pledge with President Trump.
He doesn't need to make it with Trump because Trump, like he said, is the one who is actually leading the polls. And he calls it the no-spoiler pledge. The reason he's doing this is because every Democrat out there is screaming about the fact that RFK Jr. is a spoiler in the race, that he's ruining things. And Kennedy keeps saying, I'm actually taking votes away from Trump. That's not exactly right. But regardless, he also saying he's not a spoiler because in a head-to-head matchup, and there was a Zogby poll that was done recently, a 50-state survey of likely voters, 26,000 people, mid-April, found that Biden would lose the general in a head-to-head race with Trump and that Kennedy would win. In the first scenario, Biden-Trump, 244 electoral votes for Biden, 294 for Trump. If Biden dropped out, Kennedy would win 270 votes to Trump's 268. That's still a narrow, narrow victory for Kennedy, but nonetheless, all right? Trump dropped out, by the way. Kennedy would win 367 to Biden's 171. That's how unpopular Biden is. You notice that, right? Biden's share actually drops with Trump out of the race. It's wild. Now, okay, this is all very hypothetical because Biden's not going to drop out in favor of RFK Jr., but you're not You wouldn't be crazy to think that the Democratic Party somewhere, some back office, you know, on the executive floor of the DNC, that they're not having some buyer's regret that they decided to stick with Biden and not Trump. Now, the truth is, though, that the real people that have the power behind the scenes, and Robbie, I'm going to answer your question, what you asked me when we were show prepping this morning. You know, it's tempting to flirt with the idea that the Democrats ought to replace Biden with someone, and that perhaps Kennedy could be the like that would be, you know, three-dimensional chess. If they shuffled Biden out the door and then replaced him with Kennedy. But here's why I say not so fast. I say not so fast because Kennedy is not going to be a candidate or a president that these people can control. Kennedy presents same problems, different person that Trump does. Everybody that is behind Biden is in it for their own needs. The people that are behind Biden are all benefiting from the fact that they've got a barely warm body in the place of what ought to be a independently functioning chief executive who is there sort of getting rolled in Weekend at Bernie style and a placeholder for everybody else's personal interests. That's what this is all about. So when you hear of people saying, well, RFK Jr., there's a reason why RFK failed to launch in the Democratic primary. And that's because as far as the real grassroots within the Democratic Party, it's a non-issue. It's not happening. Look at Bernie. The establishment in the Democratic Party will always win. That's because the Democratic Party is actually fundamentally undemocratic. Something, you know, that's not really supposed to say, because these are the people who are apparently, allegedly, the saviors of democracy and are constantly telling us how, you know, important they are to preserving everything that's great about the United States of America. Okay. But then they are perfectly fine turning their backs on their own primary voters and going with a candidate that is establishment, using the superdelegates and some arcane rules of the party to get their preferred candidate selected. So RFK Jr. knew that. That's why he stepped out so early. I don't think it was as much to do with his polling. I think he could have really fished something out and made it happen. Maybe not, right? But regardless, he understood that the Democratic Party was set against him. By the way, still absolutely wild that the Biden administration, the Secret Service, will not afford RFK Jr., his own father and uncle, victims of political assassinations, Secret Service protection. It's gotten to the point that I understand that RFK Jr.'s family, the Kennedys, who think he is nuts and are embarrassed by him and are supporting Team Biden, which says more, by the way, about how awful the Kennedys are than it does anything about RFK Jr. Like, I will say, in fact, the same thing I will say for Trump and people like Mary Trump, I will say for RFK Jr. and other people with the last name Kennedy who disagree with him. Kennedy is, RFK Jr. is like the most interesting and independent of all the Kennedys put together, okay? So all that said, even his family that hate him have apparently gone to Biden and begged him to provide Secret Service protection. And as I understand it, he's still refusing it. Robbie, we got to look that up. It's bananas. Biden literally would prefer to have him be shot in the head. This is precisely why when people come to, oh my gosh, I get into conversations with people. They go, you know, I get it. Sam, a lot going on, but you know what? Biden's just, for me, it's a decency thing, Sam. You know, Biden's just a far more decent candidate than Trump. And it is at that precise moment that whatever my last meal was begins to gurgitate in my stomach and is is aggressively attempting to make a comeback, if you catch my drift. It's just so disgusting. How can anybody actually say that and believe it? There's still people walking out there who think that Biden is somehow the, I don't know, the touchstone of human decency, you know? There's a guy that just loves his son. There's a guy that's good to women. There's a guy that showers with his daughter. There's a guy that used his cracked and addicted son to be his bag man for all of his bribery schemes. There's a guy who allegedly raped a woman or two and never was held to account for it. There's a guy, I could go on and on. There's a guy who's on tape saying some of the most vile, racist things imaginable that if he were a Republican would end his political career. But none of that matters because as long as he does the bidding of the people that are actually in charge of this country right now, he is protected by the Prince of Darkness on high for as long as it takes. But I think the people are getting hip to it. Honestly, I really do. Sam Rejofsky, News Talk 840, KXNT. Friends, it's been a wonderful day today. Great show. Sam at samandashlaw.com. The podcast, What's Right Show, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts. And friends, I'll be back here Friday. Friday, the week is almost up. Don't forget, next Thursday, the debate, mayoral debate here in Las Vegas. I'll be co-moderating that with Alan Stock. Go to kxnt.com to get tickets. Hope to see you there. Over and out.